Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Nothing But the Truth. I am your host, Mr. Evan. I have Miss J on the phone, and I will have Mr. 336 come on the phone shortly. But for everyone who wants to know what this show is about, like I say, we've been doing this about 7 years, but for the ones that's new to this, I'm going to go ahead and lay it out for you. Let's go ahead and start here. So, for today's show, we're going to talk about mass incarceration. More than 2 million people are incarcerated in the U.S. prisons, as well as local and county jails. 1 in 3 black men in the United States will go to prison or jail if current trends continue. An average of 5 million people are under state or federal supervision in the form of probation or parole. Discrimination in school discipline contributes to disparities in incarceration rates. African Americans comprise of only 12% of the U.S. population, but 44% is incarcerated. The UN Committee of Elimination on Racial Discrimination has expressed concern about the school-to-prison pipeline and called on the United States to intensify its efforts to address racial disparities in the application of disciplinary measures. On tonight's show, we will discuss why our African Americans are being targeted for mass incarceration. It's not just African Americans, too. It's also Hispanics, too. And we're going to go into that as well. This is why it's important for everyone to understand what the corporate prison system is and what does it consist of. You know, it's just not something where it's a safeguard. It's a revolving door, endless cycle of regression in our society. So if you haven't tuned in from last week, we did a two-part series. The first part of it was 13. We didn't finish all of 13. So for the second part, we're going to go ahead and finish up that video, conclude with that video that we got from Netflix, which is called 13. You can watch it on Netflix, as I say. And then we're going to go into discussion, and we'll have two clips for you, and that's going to conclude our show. Now, for our people that are listening, I want you to know something. Nothing But the Truth is going to be here. It's not going to go anywhere. We're going to keep promoting the show. I need you, the people, the audience that are listening to the show, to spread the word. People who have liked the page on Facebook, we're working on getting that unofficial up. This is an official page. Again, I repeat, this is an official page. I want you to all tell your friends, add your friends, recommend the show to your friends. You can download this on your iPod, on your iPhone, or whatnot. You can do it on Android. You can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/NBN_truth, and you can actually listen to 155 shows that I've did since 2007. We've been talking about relationships. We've been talking about everyday things. We've been talking about the social injustices that we're dealing with in our community. You know, this stuff that we see every day is not going anywhere unless we address it. We got to talk about it, and we need to talk about it now. So I want to not delay anymore. Now, before I say anything, if for some of y'all to say, hey, I can't stay on the computer all day, I do you one for you. This is what you need to do. You need to go to the following phone number that I'm going to give you. Dial it in. Put your cell phone up there. I will see if you're on there, and we'll just put you on mute. So the number that you need to call in as a guest is 646-787-8150. It's going to give you the option if you want to holler at me, just let me know. I will come on there actually as default to see what's going on, but I'm not going to do it while the presentation goes on. So I'm letting you know that as well, too. And we also got the chat room that's opened up. So if you go to Nothing But The Truth on Blog Talk Radio, we can chat in there as well, too. I don't want a lot of people to be wondering, like, hey, what's going on? Why can't I do this or why can't I do that? I want y'all to be aware that you do have these options available for you. So without any further delay, I'm going to go ahead and start the show where we left off at, all right? I'll talk to you right after that. Stand by.
This beloved figure that everybody wants to put on a pedestal. He was considered one of the most dangerous people in America by the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Don't tell me that Dr. King has no relevance to the young boys in the street. They deal with little bitty cops. You deal with the top cops.
We were brought here against our will. We were not brought here to be made citizens. We were not brought here to enjoy the constitutional gift that they speak so beautifully about.
Malcolm, whole entourage was implicated with police. He has the police in his entourage, and he had regular public entourage undercover. So afraid of black dissent.
FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover today asserted that the Black Panthers represent the greatest internal threat to the nation.
J. Edgar Hoover said, these Panthers represent the greatest threat to American Christianity.
Panthers never were that big. I mean, no one in their right mind could ever believe that the Black Panthers were going to bring down the greatest military force in the history of the world. The whole movement was criminalized and destroyed systematically by the government. I think people haven't thought about what it means to lose a Brett Kemp, who somehow was able to pull together blacks and white and Puerto Rican and Native Americans to fight for justice at 21.
We're going to stand up to this, not to have locked up, not to anybody locked up, that you can jail a revolutionary, but you can't jail a revolution.
He has it.
The head of the Black Panthers in Illinois was killed today by police in Chicago.
Illinois Panther Chairman Fred Antwon, another Panther leader from Peoria, Illinois, was killed.
Angela Davis on its list of 10 most wanted fugitives. Edgar Davis, the power of the black intellect.
One of the things that we really have to talk about in terms of the whole question of time. What does he criminal in society?
That had to be broken.
And in my case, Ronald Reagan was the governor of California, Richard Nixon was the president of the U.S. The whole apparatus of the state was set up against me. They really meant to send me to the death center in order to take a turn.
The actions of the FBI and African Americans are rather remarkable. Sorry again. A long sister started with his sister on trial, and she said no. He said you won't.
Let me go ahead and make that correction real quick. Sorry about that.
Of leadership, running folk out the country, killing folks, framing folks, you will be vulnerable to Bill Clinton or anybody else. They'll do to you what they will. Neighborhood watch leader saw Martin walking inside a gated subdivision near Orlando. He thought the 17-year-old looked suspicious.
He's got his hand in his waistband. And he's a black male. He's trying to always get away.
Are you following him?
Yeah, okay, we don't need you to do that.
So you think he's yelling help?
Yes.
Alright, what is your name? Tonight, a deadly shooting in Stanford. Police have the gun that got the shooter, but they have not arrested him. George Zimmerman, armed with a gun, followed this quote-unquote suspicious kid after the dispatcher told him not to. They ended up on the ground in a fight, and George Zimmerman shot and killed Trayvon Martin. The police could not arrest Zimmerman because of this Florida law called Stand Your Ground, which says you can kill someone if you feel threatened, even though it was Zimmerman who had pursued Martin throughout the neighborhood with a gun.
Mr. Zimmerman felt that he, in self-defense, fired his weapon.
Not only was he not arrested after the killing, but in court, Zimmerman actually pleaded self-defense and got off under the Stand Your Ground law.
We, the jury, find George Zimmerman not guilty.
The Stand Your Ground law that was passed in Florida played a huge role in the Trayvon Martin tragedy, and this really ignited the movement that we see today.
Florida's Stand Your Ground law came into the spotlight.
How did this law not only get in place in Florida, but around the country? And all the fingers kept pointing back to Alex.
Alex sounds like the name of a high school lacrosse player who just got baked and wrecked his dad's Saab. But incredibly, it's actually even worse.
Alec is a political lobbying group.
Alec is a political lobbying group.
They write laws.
They write laws.
And give them to Republicans.
And give them to Republicans.
Stand Your Ground.
Stand Your Ground.
Was written by Alec.
Alec is this private club, and its members are politicians and corporations. But the real question is, should politicians and corporations be in the same private club? Under the umbrella of Alec, get to propose laws to their political counterparts, most of whom are Republicans. So through Alec, corporations have a huge say in our lawmaking. And at Alec's task force meetings, corporate lobbyists secretly vote as equals with lawmakers on bills that those lawmakers then introduce to become laws in our state.
Alec is every roughly one in four state legislators are members of the crowd. Here's their model electricity freedom bill, which everyone says is therefore enacted that the state of insert state repeals the renewable energy mandate. So as long as you can remember and spell the name of your state, you can introduce legislation.
We've also seen Alec bills introduced where a lawmaker forgot to take Alec's letterhead off the bill, without remembering to take off the Alec letterhead to try to the real role of Alec and Alec corporations from those bills.
I'm just curious, does the legislation have some connection to Alec?
Representative Eckert, I'm not sure why we're pursuing this course of questioning. This bill is my bill. It's not Alec's bill.
The reason I ask is because earlier you passed out a handout that says Gottwalt at the top, and it says Healthcare Compact. There's a logo right in the middle of that page. And I went to the Alec website, and there's exactly the same font, the same size, and the same logo. I mean, literally, it's verbatim.
Well, it's totally shocking to know that Alec has been around for more than 2 decades now. And it's even been frustrated to be used to finish the
political vote. Alec has forged a unique partnership between state legislators and leaders from the corporate and business community.
Corporations have been influencing laws for decades now through Alec.
They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Nearly every Alec bill benefits one of its corporate funders. The corporation Walmart was a long-standing member of Alec at the time that it adopted the so-called Stand Your Ground law. The law that created an atmosphere where gun sales boom. Walmart is the biggest seller of long guns in the U.S., has been the largest retailer of bullets in the world. So it's reasonable to think that Walmart benefited from these Stand Your Ground laws that Alec pushed, that initially prevented the arrest of the killer of Trayvon Martin, and was designed to prevent the arrest, prosecution, and conviction of the killer Trayvon Martin, including through changing the jury instructions to require that a jury be told that someone like George Zimmerman has a right to stand his ground, but not that someone like Trayvon Martin has a right to stand his ground against someone like George Zimmerman with a gun assailing him. After the outcry over Stand Your Ground at the Trayvon Martin tragedy, Walmart stepped out of Alec, left Alec, abandoned Alec, but the Walmart family continues to fund Alec. Other corporations followed suit and stepped away from Alec, but many corporations are still members. including Koch Industries, State Farm Insurance, Pharma, which is the lobbying group for the pharmaceutical industry. ALEC has been supported by the tobacco industry, as well as AT&T and Verizon. And for nearly two decades, one of those corporations was Corrections Corporation of America.
Every day we serve our communities, from small towns to large cities and more than 60 locations across our country. As the nation's fifth largest correctional system, we own and manage secure correctional facilities.
CTE was the first corporation in the U.S. It started as a small company in Tennessee in 1983.
These folks started making contracts with states, and they had to protect their investments, so the states were required to keep these prisons filled, even if nobody was committing a crime. And in the late 80s and early 90s, this became a growth industry, unlike very few growth industries in America's history. It was absolutely a model guaranteed to succeed.
And one of the ways we see that is through the role of CCA within ALEC to advance a series of bills.
All the legislation you could think of that we fight so hard against, three strikes, you're out.
Three strikes and you are out.
Mandatory minimum sentencing law.
Serve at least 85% of their sentence.
We're the ones they were putting out there, like on a premier city dinner venue, getting influx of money to generate the profit that would go to the shareholders.
Through ALEC, CCA became the leader in private prisons. It's a multi-billion dollar business today that gets rich off punishment.
We are America's leader in partnership corrections. We are CCA.
And so through ALEC, CCA had a hand in shaping crime policy across the country, including not just prison privatization, but the rapid increase in criminalization.
I think this accusation that, quite frankly, is just false. Somehow, ALEC was in favor of imprisoning a bunch of people for because of private prisons. I think that's just, unfortunately, one of these attack-type tactics they do on ALEC.
ALEC put forward a number of policies to increase the number of people in prison and to increase the sentences of people who are in prison.
I'm trying to think how to address it. It's hard to address something that's, basically, almost like folklore at this point.
They are not doing anything to really clean up that past or to address the real consequences for real people of the extreme policies they put. In fact, it doesn't even talk about its past history.
I mean, it's hard for me to even understand what they're even talking about. A lot of
CCA directly profited from its investment in ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and the American people in many ways were harmed by these policies due to the mass incarceration of people, particularly people of color.
Look, right now our position is that we want less people in prison. I don't think that helps the private prison industry, quite frankly. I think myself and the lawmakers, we're just always looking for better, innovative ways to run government. And I think that's one thing as conservatives, those being in free market and limited government, we pride ourselves on. We're supposed to be the party of innovation.
Another bill that ALEC innovated was SB 1070. CCA was on the ALEC task force that pushed that law that gave police the right to stop anyone they thought looked like an immigrant. This law filled immigration detention facilities, and it directly benefited an ALEC member, CCA.
CCA could potentially reap huge financial benefits from SB 1070, since 1070 was designed to lock up a lot more people in Arizona on federal immigration charges. Cha-ching!
An influx of undocumented immigrants, many of them children, has crammed
in Arizona. Corrections Corporation of America, or CCA, holds the federal contract to house detained immigrants. It's worth more than $11 million every month. Immigration facilities are a disgrace. Their families kept there in horrible conditions.
They're called detention facilities, but they're really prisons for immigrants. So you call them a detention facility, doesn't make them not a prison. They are a prison, they just have a different name.
What happened was some people in the immigration system, the merger of immigration enforcement and law enforcement. So that some of the same things that were used in the war on drugs are now migrating to other populations.
You heard it with Donald Trump, not about blacks, but with Mexicans. They're rapists, murderers. And by the way, some of them may be good people. Oh, boy, where do you start on something like that?
In late 2010, CCA left Alex after a big NPR story came out accusing Alex of quitting SB 1070.
Alex never knew anything on immigration. No which way, not to the right, not to the left, nothing. So I don't really have anything for you on that one. Sorry.
Alex has recently made what I would describe as a PR move to say that it's going to be right on crime, that it's going to be on the right side of criminal justice policy and reform. That move comes in the wake of its loss of a massive number of corporations.
What ultimately happened is our board looked at the issues that Alec worked on and decided that we don't do social issues. We are focused on economic issues. We jettisoned basically almost all of our legislation that was pre-2007. So we basically fresh slate going forward, let's start going forward.
This industry knows that it's dying and is actually preparing for the next thing. And the animating factors that have led to a system like bail, we're always going to see new permutations of a cancer, right? And that's what this is.
And over the last couple of years, since 2008, we've been involved really in a wholesale reform effort where 31 states have now adopted positive changes on sentencing, on parole, probation reform.
Alec has a concerted effort to privatize almost every aspect of government, but we had no idea that they were also aiming to try to privatize probation and parole. Alec is no longer concerned about CCA and CCA's interest. CCA no longer has a seat at the table with Alec, so it doesn't have a financial interest in advancing policies that increase the profits of CCA. But the American Bail Coalition is still part of Alec.
Today, our sites are filled to the brim and overflowing with inmates.
When I think of systems of oppression, historically in this country and elsewhere, they're durable and they tend to reinvent themselves and they do it right under your nose.
One of the things they want to do is GPS monitoring.
Having a home confinement system for
homes. Some of them be monitored on
locked up in a cage in a cell inside of an institution where they will have ankle braces on. They have wrist braces on.
That helps solve the prison overcrowding problem.
What I worry about is that fall asleep at the wheel, wake up, realize that we have people that we're incarcerating. That is what I think. Probation and really investing in those programs.
How much progress is it really if communities of color are still under perpetual surveillance and control, but now there's a private company making money off the GPS monitor rather than the person being locked in a literal cage?
If we can help you save crime victims in your legislative district, you don't mind me making a dollar.
So Alex continues to be a body that, while it may have some really strong rhetoric on why it supports crime reform now, suddenly, sort of out of the blue, it actually has real financial interest.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
If you're in the prison business, you don't want reform. You may say you do, but you don't.
And there are a bunch of people out there desperately trying to make sure that that prison population does not drop one person because their economic model needs that.
Prison industrial complex refers to the system of mass incarceration and companies that profit from mass incarceration. That includes both operators of private prisons, which get a lot of attention, vast sea of vendors.
From Securus Technologies that supplies telephone services that made $114 million in profits last.
Those calls to family and friends are costing a pretty penny in state prisons.
They inflate the price that they charge the inmate and the inmate's family.
For example, in Maryland, if you earn minimum wage, you'd have to work an hour and a half to afford phone calls. There's also Aramark, one of the big food service providers. In more than one state, they've been accused of having maggots in the food that they've served. Provides health care services in 28 different states, multi-million-dollar contracts for this service,
huge incentives,
given to contractors for very long contracts. So it's actually a disincentive to provide this service because you're going to be paid anyway.
About mass incarceration in this country and to question it is because
called Unicorn that does $900 million in business.
Talk about sweatshops, and we beat our fists at people overseas for exploiting poor free labor, but we don't look that it's happening right here at home every day. You have corporations who are now investing in this free labor.
It's all over. It's from sports, uniform, hats, Microsoft, Boeing. Federal inmates are making the guidance systems for the Patriot missile system. JCPenney jeans made in Tennessee. Victoria's Secret. Anderson Flooring, wood products. It's always been potatoes. They're planted, grown, harvested, packed, and shipped by inmates.
Victoria's Secret and JCPenney switched suppliers once their ties came to light. Simply put, corporations are operating in prisons and profiting from punishment.
Prison industries have gotten so big that it's very difficult now to try and do away with them. Too much money out there, too many lawmakers that support it because they're being lobbied. So the public's got to stand up and take it back. It'll never get done if they don't.
Yes, it is what it is, and that's how it goes. It's treated like a...
His arrest, Khalif Browder was walking home from a party with his friends in the Bronx when he was stopped by police.
Khalif was charged with a crime, really petty crime, that it turns out he didn't commit.
And they said, we're going to take you to the precinct, and most likely we're going to let you go home. And then I never went home.
They told you that you could post bail.
Yes, that's correct.
$10,000.
Yes.
And of course,
I couldn't make that. My family couldn't play it.
There are thousands of people in jail right this moment that are sitting there for no other reason than because they're too poor to get out.
We have a criminal justice system that treats you better if you're rich and guilty than if you're poor and innocent. Well, not a couple of
courtroom dramas. That's really not being.
Nobody in the hood goes to trial.
97% of those. That's one of the worst violations of human rights that you can imagine in the United States.
Yeah, but in this country, people pleading guilty to crimes they didn't commit just because the thought of going to jail for what the mandatory minimums are is so excruciating.
Khalif Browder decided, I'm going to...
being in prison for up to 15 years and going home right then by admitting you did a crime you didn't do.
I felt like I was done wrong. I felt like something needed to be done about this. I felt like something needs to be said. If I just cop out and say that I did it, nothing's going to be done about it. I didn't do it. No justice is served.
What you're not taught is that if you exercise that right to a trial and you are convicted, we will punish you, or the court basically punishes you
for having the audacity to not take a plea deal. Want to take it to trial. That's when the mental health issues started to deteriorate. He started to get into fights.
After a while, I just kept hearing the same thing from him. I was a cope with just being in there, and I was rough. I already knew after a while, I just gave up hope.
Oh, a baby.
You miss everything. Everything about being home, the fresh air. And you want to be home. And then when they give you an offer to go home right then and there, it's like, I want to go home, but then you know you didn't. I was scared all day because where any harm would come.
Khalees suffered through so many beatings, both by the people he was locked up with and the guards, he ended up attempting suicide on several occasions. Dropped all the charges and he was set free.
In an environment that people have argued is designed to break you within 30 days.
I mean, I can't really tell you what's next, but this happens every day.
Years after it.
If I would have just been pled guilty, then my story would have never been heard. Nobody would have took the time to listen to me. I'd have been just another criminal.
Prison industrial complex, the system, the industry, it is a beast. It eats Black and Latino people for breakfast, lunch, dinner.
We didn't even think about who gets the job. Social workers and teachers. We want people with understanding of human behavior. And we do the opposite.
You immediately become numb. I think that's what jail does to humans. That immediate dehumanization and sensory deprivation that nobody can really understand unless they live through it. For the last 14 years, my son has not had any human contact other than to be handcuffed by an officer. He doesn't even have a window in his cell, and that's one thing that really disturbs me. It troubles me. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that we would even have such an architectural design in our country. I never realized that there was prison cells built like that.
Human beings are not born to be.
Most people wouldn't keep their pets in the kind of conditions that we keep people in.
Prisons and jails have become warehouses in the sense that where we've moved as a society is that it's not enough to just deprive you of your liberty, but we want to punish you too.
Most of the society don't understand what it means to be behind those barbed wires.
Once somebody is arrested and convicted, they're gone. Nobody particularly cares. In many ways, the prison system are sort of in the dark.
It's so constantly and emotionally, it makes it a lot easier to say, send people there.
If you look at the whole problem, you say, what are we doing? We have too many laws locking too many people up. In prison. And while they're in prison, doing very little, if anything, to rehabilitate them so that they can re-enter civil society when they get out. And then when they get out,
over 40,000 collateral consequences for people that come through our criminal justice system.
It's that question, have you been convicted of a felony that appears on the job application?
In some cases, can affect your access to student loans.
They can't get many business licenses.
Private rentals in regards to housing. It's that question that appears on life insurance.
The scarlet letter follows you for the rest.
March of 2015, we had tens of thousands of people come to celebrate the 50th anniversary of crossing. building of the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And very few of those people realize that nearly 30% of the population of Alabama today has part of a criminal conviction. We actually tell American citizens when they pay back their debt to society, their citizenship will still be denied from them.
So many aspects of the old Jim Crow are suddenly legal again once you've been branded a felon. It means that in America, we haven't so much ended racial caste, but simply redesigned it. We are now in an era where Democrats and Republicans alike have decided it's not in their interest anymore to maintain the prison system as it is.
Now all of a sudden, Hillary Clinton is meeting with Black Lives Matter activists and talking about it.
It's time to change our and end the era of mass incarceration.
She's made a major address on it.
We will reform our criminal justice system from end to end and rebuild trust between law enforcement and the communities they serve.
President Obama going to prison, you know, as the first sitting president to ever visit a prison. We've got an opportunity at the time when overall violent crime rates have been dropping. At the same time as incarcerations last year dropped for the first time in 40 years.
And conservatives, who were always seen or understood as being the tough-on-crime ones, have now embraced justice reform. It's very man-bites-dog.
You see, Texas used to spend for minor offenses. We shifted our focus to diversionary programs like community supervision.
We got to ask ourselves, do we feel comfortable with people taking the lead of a conversation in a moment where it feels right politically?
Historically, when I look at to create reform, they inevitably lead to more repression.
And so if we leave it up to them, what they're going to do is they're going to tinker with the system. They're not going to do the sort of change that we need to see as a country to get us out of this mess, and they're certainly not going to go backwards the mess they've made because they're ready to make that admission. But as a country, I don't think we've ever been ready to make the admission that we have steamrolled through entire communities and multiple generations when you think about things like slavery and Jim Crow and all the other systems of oppression that have led us to where we are today.
So much fun. I love it. I love it. We having a good time? USA. USA.
Knock the crap out of Bush. Seriously.
I am the law and order.
had today?
We thought, I mean, they called the end of slavery Jubilee. We thought we were done then. And then you had 100 years of Jim Crow terror and lynching. Dr. King, these guys come on the scene, Ella Jo Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, we get the bills passed, vote, and then they break out the handcuffs. Label you felon, you can't vote or get a job. So we don't know what the next iteration of this will be, but it will be. It will be. And we will have to be vigilant.
I'm a prison cell, 6x9, living hell, stone wall, metal bars for the guards in jail. My nickname, the can, the slam of the big house. I'm the place many fear because there's no way out.
Bureau of Justice, 1 and 3. Of the U.S. population make up 40.2% of the prison.
Industrial complex relies historically on the inheritances of slavery.
The 13th Amendment says no invite to servitude except for those who have been duly convicted of a crime. So once you've been convicted of a crime, you are in essence a slave of the state.
The stroke of a pen is not self-enforcing. And so while the 13th Amendment is hailed as this great milestone for freedom and abolitionists celebrate, and, you know, this is the end of a lifelong quest, the reality is much more problematic. Well, once that clause is inserted in there, it becomes a tool. It's there. It's embedded in the structure. And for those who seek to use this criminality clause as a tool, it can become a pretty powerful one because it's privilege. It's in the Constitution. It's the supreme law of the land.
Throughout American history, African Americans have repeatedly been controlled through systems of racial and social control that appear to die, but then are reborn in new form tailored to the needs and constraints of the time. You know, after the collapse of slavery, a new system was born, convict leasing, which was a new form of slavery. And once convict leasing faded away, a new system was born, a Jim Crow system that relegated African Americans to a permanent second-class status. And here we are, decades after the collapse of the old Jim Crow, and a new system has been born again in America, a system of mass incarceration that once again strips millions of poor people, overwhelmingly poor people of color, of the very right supposedly won in the civil rights movement.
And so instead of talking about it, we just tried to move on. After the Civil Rights Act was passed, and after the civil rights laws, we tried to play it off. And because we didn't deal with it, that narrative of racial difference continued. And it turned into this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that follows every black and brown person wherever they are.
About Mike Brown. It was also this pattern of mass criminalization and mass incarceration. There was an average of 3 warrants per household in Ferguson. And so people rose up because they understood that they were also enemies of the state, seen as enemies of the state. The communities in which black people live are really become occupied territories, and black people have become seen as enemy combatants, right, who don't have any rights and who can be stopped and frisked and, you know, arrested and detained and questioned and killed with impunity.
We're going to look at
the largest scale riots that we know of in recent history, from Rodney King to the Detroit riot in 1967, Newark riot in 1967, Harlem riot in 1964, Watts in 1965. Every single one of those riots was a result of police brutality. That is the common thread.
It would be a mistake to say, as many people do in the current context, that, oh, if you're against the police and you're against law and order and these are hardworking civil servants, they're putting their lives on the line for you every day. And, you know, that's true. People who join the police do so, you know, to do these sorts of things. But if you dismiss black complaints of mistreatment by police as being completely rooted in our modern context, then you're missing the point completely. There has never been a period in our history where the law and order branch of the state has not operated against the freedoms, the liberties, the options, the choices that have been available for the black community, generally speaking. And to ignore that racial heritage, to ignore that historical context, means that you can't have an informed debate about the current state of blacks and police relationship today, because this didn't just appear out of nothing. This is a product of a centuries-long historical process, and to not reckon with that is to shut off solutions.
We may have lost the sheep of the Ku Klux Klan, but clearly when you see black kids being shot down, then obviously we didn't cut out this cancer.
Of this kind of person, we don't need to see pictures to understand what's going on. It's really to kind of like speak to the masses who've been ignoring this for the majority of their life. But I also think that there's trouble just showing, you know, black bodies as dead bodies too. Too much of anything becomes unhealthy, unuseful.
I think they need to be seen if the family is okay with it. It wasn't until things were made visual in the civil rights movement that we really saw folks come out and be shocked at the movement.
You have to shock people into paying attention.
But there's a kind of historical trajectory that we can trace here through media and technology. We went back to slave narratives, writing autobiographies of slave narratives. Later in the 19th century, people began to use photographs, and they showed the images of the famous slave quarters and the back of the back of the box that they found in the quarters. Or the images of slaves, which white people could see.
Murder
of
Angel was really thought of as being one of the primary catalysts for the rights movement. The willingness of his mother to have an open casket funeral. Hundreds and hundreds of black folks filed past and see this young boy who had been killed by white supremacists in the South. To publish those photographs in black publications so the entire black world, like our Facebook or our Twitter now, right, so that the whole black world could see what had happened.
In the 1950s, Dr. King and the civil rights movement used television in this way. Look, this is what segregation looks like. These are dogs attacking children. These are people being fire hosed. Searching for the medium of technology that will confirm your experience such that your basic humanity can be recognized.
The difference now is somebody can hold up one of these, get what's going on, they can put it on YouTube, and the whole world has to deal with it. That's what's new. It's not the protest, it's not the brutality, it's the fact that we can force a conversation about it.
We have been consistently being murdered as a result of police aggression. They generally would excuse it by calling us criminals when they was killing Oscar Grant. When they got to Eric Gardner,
everyone points out saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. But the sentences before that were, why are you always stopping me? Why is it day in and day out, week in and week out, you're stopping me? And that, I think, is
hugely important.
When we think about the children who are killed at the hands of the state, I think about Tamir Rice at 12 years old and the way that he was killed, you know, it hits my heart.
Has grown, has sprawled, and developed appetite that is gobbling up people and communities of all colors. But if it hadn't been for the fact that it began with a group of people defined by race that we as a nation have learned not to care about, we wouldn't be talking about 2 million people behind bars today.
People say all the time, well, I don't understand how people could have tolerated slavery. How could they have made peace with that? How could people have gone to a lynching and participated in that? How did people make sense of this segregation, this white and colored only drinking? That's so crazy. If I was living at that time, I would have never tolerated anything like that. And the truth is, we are living at this time, and we are tolerating it.
Unsung, forgive them, Father. They know this not undone. My grandmother died. Pride of the pilgrims, respect lives of millions. They say separation, fathers and children. Institution ain't set to building, but a fact that happened. Life and breath, life and children.
All right. That is 13. I'm sorry about the noise from the phone. I don't know what's going on, but it's clicking back and forth. I don't know what's going on with that, but we're going to start getting people in here that want to talk about this. So I'm going to open up the line. You're welcome to go ahead and call in. The number is 646-787-8150. Again, 646-787-8150. You're welcome to call in. I know people were listening. I'm sorry again, like I said, about the noise. It's like someone's on the phone, but no one's on the phone other than me. I don't know. Makes you wonder. People don't want us to talk about this. So let me go ahead and bring in Miss J and Miss 336 and see what their thoughts is about this. Hey, everyone. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Hey. Sorry about the I don't know what was that, the whole background noise or whatnot. Like someone was trying to breathe on the phone, but no one's here, so makes you wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So from what you could hear, what did you think about that documentary, and what's your thoughts about this whole situation that we're in?
Oh, from watching this documentary, this is Lady J right here. From gathering from it, I found it very profound. I kind of like what the last comment that was mentioned on there when it says, how could we tolerate, I guess, slavery and all the things that happened in the past and how the injustice of how we treated people back then. And then they said, well, you know, if they had a way, they wouldn't have tolerated, you know, back then. But in the fact that we are tolerating it right now, I kind of like that last statement that he said, because it is profound that, you know, we are still not really doing anything about what's going on in our prison systems right now as to fixing the problem or even talking about it. And as it's known right now, it still goes on today. And not only does it go on today and it's still, you know, a problem, that is also going towards into our children, which is like in the school systems, where you see also an increase in juvenile incarcerations as well. So from this documentary, it just put out a lot of good points that there's still a problem here in America, and we just really, really need to shine a light on this.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Ms. 336? What do you think about that?
I mean, I would totally agree with what she's saying, and ultimately, I think the reason why, you know, I mean, we know that this is wrong, but I think it comes down to the reason why, you know, businesses or certain groups of people aren't saying anything is it comes down to money, and as long as they can still make profit off of this, I think it's a nice idea to think that businesses will do right, like, you know, do more right morally, but I think ultimately, as long as they continue to profit off of this type of labor, it's just I really don't see them having a real strong push to change anything. And
I agree,
I think it's a shame that it comes down to just money. It's a, you know, it's a shame that money is basically you know, people have sold out their morals or, you know, their values just over a dollar, and I think it's a shame.
Yeah, it's disgusting, very disgusting. And I'm glad you brought up those businesses, because I went and did a little bit of research and figured out it's not only like these guys are saying, hey, I'm not touching, I don't know if they're mine. It's like, well, we're not actually sending these people to prison, but we're going to make some extra money on our business. I can name a few businesses that this deals with, and a lot of you folks are probably figuring out, what can we do? Because I know protesting, some people say, okay, you can march all you want to, it's not going to do anything. And you're right, it's not going to do everything to a certain extent. But when you stop investing into these companies, that says something too. So I'm just going to go ahead and let it rip from what I'm reading from this article that I have here. There are a few companies that are basically having a legalization where they can contract prison labor by private companies that mount their operations inside state prisons. And some of these companies are IBM, Boeing — that's a defense contractor if anyone didn't know that — Motorola, Microsoft, AT&T, Wireless, Texas Instrument. You remember those guys with the calculators? Guess who made that? Dell, Compaq, Honeywell, Hewlett-Packard, some known ones, and, you know, some other ones, Intel, Northern Techcom, TWA, Nordstrom's, Macy's, Target stores. There's just a few of them, folks. So don't think, oh, because they didn't mention it in the documentary, they don't exist. I can give you this. I think we posted this up here on who's investing in on this. And I believe, Ms. Shea, you were talking about the pharmaceutical companies are getting in on this too.
Yeah, we got pharmaceutical companies, like Pfizer. A lot of these other drugs that we use that from pharmaceutical market that they're making. Ladies, Victoria's Secrets did it too. So I know a lot of y'all like buying garments from them, but they also use inmates to help sew underwear for y'all. A lot of our healthy health nuts, so like going to Whole Foods, they also participate with that. They help with this particular one, just raising tilapia. So if you think you're buying fresh fish from a farm-raised place, well, yes, but those prisoners are actually helping them raise those tilapias and actually help you have it in your store. McDonald's, BP, Wally World, my favorite, Walmart. Everybody goes to Walmart and have a good time, but a lot of things, labor and youth, they get out of us for prison labor. So there is a list. I believe we did put this, or either we shared it between one another, but we are going to put that on the Facebook site so you can see the list of other people that are participating with prisoners.
Yes.
With labor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's very terrible because a lot of people don't understand the whole plan and process. And I think you might call me a conspiracy theorist, but I was talking to Lady J about this whole voucher that they're trying to do for the schools where they're not going to, you know, basically going back to the days of Bush, W. Bush, when they're talking about, you know, leave no child left behind or whatever, that whole thing. Trump is trying to come up with a new way where you won't have Common Core. So some of y'all, I guess, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Ms. J, but the Common Core, how it has is basically, okay, these students can go to these schools and they're allowed to go to, right? But I think with this new voucher, it's like, you know what, we're going to give everyone a voucher who has a kid and you can go to any school you want to go to. Now, that might sound good at one point, but there's a few flaws with that. You know, you're going to see a lot of charter schools going to come up and start appearing, and they're going to start sending. You know how charter schools are. If anyone who have friends that did that, they can pick and choose who they want. So that leaves out some of these students that might not be able to go, and then they're going to get the less of the opportunities that they should have had when they was going to a regular school. So I think when they get left like that, they get left behind. Unemployment increases because they don't have the skills to do what they should be able to do to keep a job. And then that's where people start committing crimes. And I think that's where it's a new grand scheme, in my honest opinion, where they're going to do okay from the schoolhouse to the prison house. I think that's a new design that's going to come up, and a lot of people need to be aware of what's going on because they're trying to say, well, let's just leave it to the states because already Donald Trump has already said he wants to get rid of the Board of Education if people don't understand that. He said, I'm done with them. I want them done. And that's kind of crazy talk right there.
Totally crazy.
It's like, well, I'm here for your – I want our generation to be great. I want our kids to be great. But you know what? I'm done with the Board of Education. Y'all can raise them yourself. And, you know,
but,
I think that's
– go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just interrupting you for a little bit, but I was sitting there thinking about that, what you're saying. It's like, how can you get rid of this system and making people choose using this type of system with its vouchers and stuff when half of these kids probably not even reading on their grade level?
No,
so,
they can't.
You're sending them out to probably like a private schools or something like that. And who's to say that these private schools are going to actually teach them anything any differently if they can't even do simple math or be on the same reading or writing or math level in school already if they're coming from a school that has a poor rating in their curriculum. So, I mean, I just don't see how that's going to work. I know, a lot of, Trump is thinking he has the answers to everything, but I see those as being problems. And it's like you basically spending more money where you could be investing it into helping teachers and the students in that school system be better.
But see, that would require that he actually care about those teachers and those students in that school system, and he doesn't. So,
yeah,
he really is not going to try to help them no way.
Yeah, it makes me wonder. And, you know, after he got elected, you know, the stock for all these companies that we're talking about who's building up these prisons went up 49%. If people wanted to work, it shot up 49% after they declared him president-elect. Another thing that I thought in my mind is, you know, he is talking about illegal immigration. People are like, well, how will he do that? I think it would go back to the days of Nazi Germany where people, you know, people said, well, how do you know who's illegal, who's this and that? People are going to start running their mouth saying, well, I don't think this person should be here. And I think they're going to build up more prisons. They're going to say, well, since they are in the process of deporting, we're just going to keep them in our jail cells that we're building. Because, you know, at the end of the day, some of these prisons have got a scheme in it where if you don't keep it at a certain rate, meaning like the high 90% or whatnot, as far as like 97% or 99% full, that they come back and charge the state. And a lot of people don't know that. People say, well, what?
Yeah.
You know, and that goes back to, yeah, it goes back to you. So it makes you wonder, do you really need those prison systems? I'm not saying everyone's innocent. I'm not saying that. But, like, if you send someone in jail just to make money, that's terrible. That's like you going to hell with gasoline draws on. So, I mean, no one deserves to be in prison. You heard about that one guy we were listening to in the video where he was sent to jail, you know, falsely accused, and they were sitting there telling him, just admit that you're guilty and you can get out now. And he's like, no, I'm not doing that. He ended up killing himself when he got out finally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people
that's
don't talk about that. Yeah, I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, with the system going on that we have on now, it has to be restructured correctly. It should not be where the United States, which is supposed to be number one, shouldn't be number one in this category, locking up people. We don't even have the biggest population in the world, but we're locking up more people. We have so many people locked up, they almost equate the popular vote of Hillary Clinton, if anyone is aware of what the statistics go. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you lock them up. You lock them up on what is it called, Ms. 336?
Nonviolent?
Nonviolent
offenses?
Yeah. You lock them up years and years and years and years, but you don't do anything to correct the problem. So when they get out, they can't find a job. And I think from what I heard from Warren Ballantyne, he mentioned this on his show, he say it should be a way that you can give these people pardons. You know, with our president that we have in office, give these people a pardon with the condition that they pay a fine. That fine goes back into our teachers. Those teachers are getting those extra bonuses that they need to help run those schools that they need to, because, you know, I know I go off of a tangent here, but we got to have better schools as well, too. And if you're treating teachers where they're not getting paid a lot, they're going to be like, I'm not doing this. I'm not making a career out of this. I'm going to do my time and do something else. And I actually met teachers like that when I was overseas. Met some teachers straight up teaching basic English. I say, so you have to learn a language, right? They were over in Middle East. I said, no, we get a translator in the classroom. And I said, so you're teaching little kids? I said, no, we just teach like maybe 14-year-olds to 30-year-old people in a class of 12. And we just teach them English, watching movies, and we get paid $75,000 because the government is making us pay for it. So I said, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, with our prison system, we have to wonder, like, what are we going to do? Because you can't keep going like this. Do we need to change the laws? Definitely, you know. Should we go back to these private organizations and saying, yeah, I'm going to run the government for y'all, or I'm going to run the prison for y'all. Just give it to me and everything will be all right. I don't feel them on it. What's your thoughts?
I don't really know where to go with I wouldn't even know really where to start with it because it's like it's so much and so much to do. But I do have a question because I know you were saying like have these people pay a fine and then the fine goes back to the teacher. But then my other question would be like for some of the people, where would they even get the money for the fine? Because you know some places people are being held longer in jail because it's not that they're being, you know, some people are being held longer in jail because they just can't afford the bail.
Yeah,
that's true.
And you're talking about asking these people to pay a fine. I mean, if they can't even pay bail, I'm not saying the fine.
I think
would
it should be a reasonable
bail,
fine. I'd say probably like, let's say a ballpark figure, maybe between $500, $1,000. They expunge their record. So once their record's cleared, it shouldn't show up. It should not show up. Say, well, we're gonna penalize you because you got a criminal record. Because that's a lot of things that's stopping them from getting a job itself. Now,
right.
it should be some infrastructure since Donald Trump got a great plan and state legislators have plans. I think there should be some type of infrastructure that they could send these guys into. You remember back in the day with Job Corps?
Yeah.
Remember when they sent people who didn't quite finish high school to go there and they learned them a trait? They learned a trait, and at the end of the day, they got a degree. I think the same thing can apply. I honestly think it could apply. Say, hey, you're going to go through this pipeline here. Instead of pipeline to prison, pipeline to have a trait, have something that you can use to help yourself build up, you know? And so, okay, you go through this.
I was saying, like a part of a solution for trying to get them before they even get into that situation. Like if there will be like a first-time nonviolent offense, you will want to probably have that as a first line of prevention for them versus putting them into a system. So if you have like a non-violent offense, maybe you should have a system in place where you can learn, get the resources or get the help that you need. So some of these people maybe a first-time offender and they have a record for life. And if they go out there and do something else that's probably on that same level, maybe slightly higher, you know, I mean, it just kind of follows them. So I'm thinking like resources or rehabilitation programs or, like you said, like a Job Corps program or something that kind of won't keep them in the system. Because I know when I used to talk to some police officers and people in the criminal justice system, they said once you're in that system, it's very hard to get out. Even if you think about when you get a traffic ticket, if that officer comes, like if you get a traffic ticket, let's say in March, and like 6 months later you get another one, that officer knows that you got one traffic ticket, more than likely you're going to get another one. It's kind of hard to get out of it, and that brings everything about you from your insurance rate down, the points in your DMV and everything. So, I mean, I think there just has to be some kind of like leniency for those people, especially if it's, I mean, it's something that is minor.
I honestly think if we're going to talk about that, I think you ought to change the school system where we're teaching our kids not only, hey, this is how you get a job. Hey, by the way, this is how you create jobs. I think that would help, too, as a stop measure gap. Now, for that to work.
But we're not even teaching them how to get jobs right now, really.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. Teach them how to pass the test. That's what it is. But we got to change that mind frame. Get them before they get into that system. But the ones that are in the system, we got to create something for them to be like, okay, this is an avenue for you to get out. Now, you know, some people are going to be like, no, I don't want to do this. I'm going to keep doing the same thing. So be it. But for the ones that really, really need to get out of there and say, I'm willing to do that, it needs to be some type of opportunity because it's so hard.
Right.
You already got one strike because you black. You got another strike because you already went to jail. You got a third strike just waiting to happen just because they say so. So it's like it's no leeway. Hey,
you
we're going to wipe that
day.
Off of you. Yeah, you can't vote when you get this. Some states you can't vote if you are past felon. You know, can't do it. And they did their time. They served their time, but you tell me they can't vote. So, you know, there's a voting support, but, you know, you got to do all this. It needs to be a sponge, you know. The ones that are not doing anything that's going to hurt people, you know, they review those things and they look at them and it needs to be addressed because we can't keep on funneling people in this. I know these people say, well, we're going to make money. what people need to do is people listening to the show, they need to go ahead and directly write to those people that they got stock with that does this. If you're really concerned, you need to stop buying their stuff. Tell them, look, I know what you're doing. I caught you red-handed. And this, if you continue doing this, then I'm going to have to let you go. We're going to have to break ties. When people start losing their money, they might be like, I don't want to do this. This is bad. Because I don't get it. If you hurt an animal out here, PETA will come after you. But you lock a person up like they just said about the guy, treating him less than an animal, nothing is done about it. It's just like, we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, we just got to hit them in their pockets in order for them, in order for this type of stuff to change, you know, and, you know, just with America in general or certain for things to change in this country, we have to hit people in their pockets. We have to be willing to, if that means not going to Walmart or not going to Target, and I love going to Target, you know, you know, we have to be, you know, a lot of times we have to be willing to put our money where our mouth is. But, you know, like I've come across people where we did, like, you know, we boycotted Black Friday last year. And I come across, you know, some of our people, and they're more concerned about getting a 40-inch TV for $200 that they don't want to boycott anything. And I'm like, you know, there was one person I came across, and she had, like, black sons. And I'm like, so this $200 40-inch TV is more important than your sons, which are probably. And, but I
exactly.
think it goes back to, you know, we need to change our mindset. And also, we need to change our mindset and you know, start looking at what we truly value. Do you value your son or do you value this TV over here? But then even besides that, I'm like, you know, they get you on, you know, the Black Friday thing because the truth of the matter is, yeah, they have good sales on Black Friday, but the sales basically continue until the day after Christmas.
Yeah,
so I'm just like,
yeah,
you know, you got to look at this
whole
thing. But again,
that's
it's a lack of knowledge and people, the media, and, you know, they hype up certain things and it's just, you know, and I don't know. It just makes you think about that. You know, that verse, it's like, you know, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And I'm like, yo, it's happening. It happens every day.
Yeah. And I think some people think in their mind, they think, well, that won't ever happen to me. You can't make that guarantee because they can make laws change overnight. The only thing I do is say, hey, we're going to sneak this law in here. And you don't hear about it. And all of a sudden, you get fined. Or you go to jail. I mean, it's happened before, so people need to stay hip. Don't say not me, because it can happen. It can happen.
Mm-hmm.
People that think Hitler could come to power. No one thought that crazy man could come to power. All of a sudden, he came to power. So how did this happen?
Yeah, and you got
people
protesting.
By.
You got white people out there protesting out there, like, they're about to be enslaved. I'm like, you know, who was it? Saturday Night Live, they did that one with Dave Chappelle. He did that with Chris Rock. And they had that Hillary Clinton episode. Everybody was on that. Like, this is nothing new.
Yeah,
not for us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we really have to we have to open up our eyes, and we have to look beyond our little bubble and beyond you know, our specific world. But I mean, at the same time, you know, just I don't know about y'all, but I know people that are in jail. I know people that are in jail on some violent crimes, and I know people that are in jail behind dumb stuff and behind nonviolent offenses. And it's, I think if we look more at that and not just look at, okay, he was out here slanging dope or whatever, we have to look beyond that. We have to, like, he was wrong, but at the same time, does he need, like, 20, 30 years for having drugs versus this guy that didn't even get 5 and he killed somebody?
Exactly. Exactly. It needs to be changed. Another thing that I'm thinking is to preventive maintenance, to prevent people from committing crimes. We got to think about some of these people committing crimes. Some people, this is what my dad always told me. He said people would steal and rob before they starve and let their family starve. I believe that. I believe that someone's going to be like, I'm not going to sit here and starve or let my kids starve. I'm going to do something. So it's going to be what it is. So what I'm thinking, you know how we give foreign aid to all these countries and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
We were looking at one thing about the expenditure of these prisons. It's about from a research study of 2013, it was like 51.9 billion altogether. You know, instead of putting all that money like that in there, why don't they put it into the deprived areas that need economic revival? Why don't they do that? You know, that would help out so much with helping out our community. If you're saying, well, these businesses are going out, we need to start doing something, you know. And I know they say, well, not this government money. We don't want to do this. But, you know, they can't say that if they turn around giving money to countries like Israel, Egypt, countries in South America. You can't say that. They need to turn around and look back and say, okay, we got our people here too. We need to help our people before we go help out these other countries.
Exactly.
Yeah. I agree.
I think that's possible. And it's not that hard to go look at a country, and you got the statistics, you got Census Bureau, you got all those data, statistics that you need to have to look at, okay, we could tell where the crime is coming from, this and that. We can set up a think tank on what jobs need to be created. And if you're an entrepreneur and you got a good business plan, because they do this too in the government, you got a good business plan, give us the pitch. We consider it, and it should be businesses to be like, look, we want to come in there. But the icing of it is it should be people with those faces in that community that should be getting that money too. It shouldn't be a stranger just coming from another country and sitting there being like, well, I'm not even going to hire these people, because that's what happens. You see these people at your gas stations. You see them at the shops and stuff, but they won't hire people to look like us, but they will take our money from us. I don't like that. I think it should be the people in our community just getting those grants. You know, when I'm talking about grants, I'm talking about the building grants, you know. They're setting up businesses. They're setting up banks. They're setting up all those things that you need to run your community, and we're taking care of our own people. Instead of someone sitting there saying, oh, I opened up a gas station or whatever, and I don't even deal with y'all people. I don't like that. That's bad taste in my mouth. Because, I mean, with that, that's not even helping the community. When you having something inside a community and you're building something, and you got a whole network of businesses to building, you got growth. You got, in my mind, you got less crime. It's always going to be crime regardless. I don't care what anyone say. There will always be crime, but it's going to be reduced amounts of crime, because they ain't going to be thinking, man, maybe I get to stick and bust this man upside the head since I don't got no money, or should I go put in his application and have a job because I know that guy. That guy goes to church with my mom, things like that. So, I mean, that's what my thoughts are. But I won't say furthermore. I think this concludes our show for tonight. I know it's a lot of stuff that was in the documentary, a lot of stuff that we say, but I want a lot of people to realize something, that this show is not going anywhere. We're going to still talk about these issues. And I think Miss 336 coming through and Lady J coming through, I think that if we have more conversations like this, not just on the radio, but actually talking to folks, talking in the streets, talking to people that you go to school with, go to work with, and just have a deep conversation about this, because this stuff will affect us whether you like it or not. If, like Miss 336 said, she already know people like that. I know people like that in my family and whatnot that's got this situation going on. So they'll say it won't affect you, and I know a lot of people, that will never affect me. You don't know. Laws, like I say, laws can change. But we really need to have that conversation, and we really need to start having strategy behind this. We need to demand more, or we need to hold our money. That's how all it needs to go down to. You don't need to go out there with no stick and create violence, because violence is not going to get you where you need to. What you need to do is take it to them by holding your money, putting your money in your pocket. And if you can sacrifice Black Friday, if everyone, all the black people put all their money together, and brown people put their money together, and say, look, we're not spending our money with y'all no more. You can create a bankruptcy in this country. You can make Wall Street go down and plummet. And I know people say, whatever, it can happen. When people stop buying and they hear the notion that you're not going to buy because of A, B, and C, the stock market is full with, you know, speculation. They hear that, they're going to get worried. They're like, man, let's not even deal with these businesses because they're going to find out, you know. And we live in a world of information. You know, I put information up within seconds about those businesses. There are more on there. And I'm going to try to get a list for y'all, and we're going to keep going back to this issue, you know. But I thank everyone for tuning in to the show. I know a lot of people are listening. I know people get quiet because they don't want to actually, you know, jump in or chime in. I see a few of my friends pop up on there talking to me about this show. But you can get this show not only just on blogtalkradio.com/NB_truth. You can also get it on iTunes. You can also download it onto your Android. I mean, I've been doing this show for a while. I think that this is my 156th show right here. So I'm going to keep pushing them out. I think everyone enjoys the show. We're going to talk more stuff next week. I think I got a funny topic. I got to talk to Miss J about it, Lady J about that one. I don't know if we're going to do that one yet, but we'll talk about it. So it's going to be very interesting. This is dealing with dating, too, this one for next week. But I thank everyone for tuning in. And if you have any questions or any comments, you can contact me at nb_truth@yahoo.com. Also, people who are listening, go to Facebook. Go to Nothing But The Truth. You'll see us. You know the icon that's from the show, the two people holding each other in the purple background. Go ahead. Like the page, share the page. Also, you can send me messages through that page as well, too. I will respond. I have people on there that looks at the page as well, too. Now, I don't want y'all to get it twisted, but I need more folks to start liking the page and telling more about the page because that's what's going to make people want to come to it because I'm going to start filling it up with more information. That's how I work. I don't want to leave y'all out in the dust and stuff. So I thank you for all that you've done. I appreciate everyone. And I see you next week. Stay tuned.